This is the Daily Radio Ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Esther. Today, Pastor Sandy will continue teaching in Esther chapter 5.
Verse 14. Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Let a gallows be made 50 cubits tall, about 75 feet high. And in the morning, suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet." Sadly, Zeresh's suggestion has been an all too common response to Gentile jealousy of the Jews. "Just kill them." That's what Hitler said. "Take the Jews to the gallows." Sadly, the thing pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made. And apparently the construction took place immediately. The gallows went up overnight. If Haman can swing it with the king the next morning, Mordecai will be swinging before nightfall. In chapter 6, the scene shifts to the king's bedroom, verse 1. That night, the king could not sleep. Evidently, the guy at Little Caesar's put anchovies on his pizza, because he couldn't sleep. And the king needed some shut-eye. He had a busy day in front of him. And so what do you do when you can't sleep? You bring out the royal records. Surely a few pages of governmental regulations will put anybody to sleep. And so we're told, so one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. But guess what page gets read? Here we go again. God's providence is at work. Verse 2 tells us, "And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus." You remember at the end of chapter 2 when Mordecai uncovered this plot to assassinate the king. He snitched to Esther. Esther told the king, and it saved Ahasuerus' life. Mordecai's bravery and his loyalty to the king had been recorded, but had gone unrewarded. And I'm sure Mordecai felt cheated at the time. Maybe he even felt betrayed by the king. Perhaps he felt betrayed by God. "Hey, I do this good deed and nothing happens." But there was a reason. And guys, there is always a reason. God has his purposes. Just because you feel cheated, just because you go unrewarded, doesn't mean that God has forgotten or that God has neglected. Perhaps God has a reason hidden from view that's going to come back to play in the near future. Well, God's purpose is about to be revealed in Mordecai's life. Then the king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" And the king's servants who attended him said, "Nothing has been done for him." Amazing. What are the odds? Out of thousands of pages in the royal register, the one that's chosen to put the king asleep happens to mention Mordecai's kind deed. What are the odds of that? This was obviously no accident. Again, God's providence was on display. Well, the king needs a courier to deliver Mordecai's reward. And so he asks, "Is there anyone in the building?" And guess who shows up early for work that morning? So the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. You know, as the rabbis say, coincidence is not a kosher word. There are no accidents with God. I wonder how many circumstances have occurred in our lives that were the hand of God, and yet we chalk them up to coincidence. Oh, well, that just happened. It's amazing how many interesting circumstances just so happen in this book of Esther. Hey, when it just so happens in our life, when circumstances come together in God's preordained plan, let's make sure that we give God credit where credit is due. Verse 5, the king's servants said to him, "Well, Haman is here, and he's standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king asked him, "What shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor?" Now Haman thought in his heart, "Whom would the king delight to honor more than me?" Haughty Haman assumes the king's talking about him. And so he lays it on thick, man. He goes lavish. And Haman answered the king, "For the man whom the king delights to honor, let a royal robe be brought, which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, which has a royal crest placed on its head. Then let this robe and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights to honor. Then parade him on horseback through the city square and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor.'" Oh my, here's Haman's suggestion to the king. "Deck this man out in your own royal threads. Put him on a white stallion. Throw a parade in his honor. Sing his praises through the street." All the time thinking that this man is him. Then the king said to Haman, "You know, I like your idea. Hurry, take the robe and the horse, as you have suggested, and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken." New robe, $800. Horse, $2,000. Parade, $5,000. Look on Haman's face, priceless. Haman turns white as a sheet, man. His jaw must have dropped 3 feet. Verse 11. So Haman took the robe and the horse. I mean, he had no choice. This was now the king's command. And he arrayed Mordecai and led him on horseback through the city square and proclaimed before him, "Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor." And Haman had to have died every step of the way. And Mordecai's reaction to all of this had to have been just as funny. I mean, how do you react when your mortal enemy becomes the leader of the parade in your honor? I mean, wow. Well, afterward, Mordecai went back to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house, mourning with his head covered. When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him." Perhaps they were aware of God's blessing on the Jews. And they're thinking, wait a minute, you've picked a fight with one of God's kids. And in doing so, you've picked a fight with God. You're not going to stand, Haman, you're going to fall. Well, while they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs came and hastened to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. All of a sudden, the limousine arrives that's going to take Haman to the banquet with Queen Esther. He gets in the limo, and he'll never return home. You think this is as low as he can go. You think Haman has hit bottom. You figure Haman has just gotten a 23-month sentence for dogfighting. But believe it or not, it's going to get worse. His coach is about to quit. Chapter 7. So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther. And on the second day at the banquet of wine, the king again said to Esther, "What is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Up to half the kingdom, it shall be done." And finally, Esther spills the beans, and she gets to her request. Then Queen Esther answered and said, "If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss." Verse 5. So King Ahasuerus answered and said to Queen Esther, "Who is he? And where is he who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? And Esther said, and she had to have pointed to her other dinner guest, the adversary and the enemy is this wicked Haman. And so Haman was terrified before the king and queen. I have no doubt that verse is inspired. Haman wants to go home and crawl back into bed and try getting up on the other side this time. I mean, this is a bad day he's having. What happens next is wild. Then the king arose in his wrath from the banquet of wine and went into the palace garden. But Haman stood before Queen Esther, pleading for his life, for he saw that evil was determined against him by the king. Now, Ahasuerus is furious. His trusted officer has plotted to kill his wife and all of his in-laws. And recall, when Ahasuerus gets mad, he makes rash decisions. You remember his anger, remember from last week, his anger caused him to banish his former queen Vashti. You remember that part of the story? Well, in the anger management class he's been taking since that episode, Ahasuerus has learned that it's not a good idea to act rashly, that when you get angry, you need to just sort of leave the room for a little bit, settle down before you make any decisions, regain your composure, then you can make a decision. And so the king steps out of the room to take a little walk in his royal gardens. He needs a little cooling off period. Of course, when Ahasuerus leaves the room, Haman starts to beg for his life. He bows before Esther. He's groveling before her. He's pleading with her. He's an emotional wreck, and he's kind of groveling, and he's pleading. And all of a sudden, he slips, and he kind of falls over the couch where Esther has been sitting. Verse 8. And when the king returned from the palace garden to the place of the banquet of wine, Haman had fallen across the couch where Esther was. The king walks back in and he sees Haman's posture and it looks like he's making a pass at Esther. Oh my. You think Ahasuerus is mad? Now he's really mad. Then the king said, "Will he also assault the queen while I am in the house?" As the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And when someone throws the old black hood over your head, it's never a good sign. Hey, when Mordecai and Haman woke up that morning, the morning of that day, there's no way that either man could have envisioned the change in fortune that they would experience that day. That's why I'm always excited when I wake up in the morning. Seriously. Because who knows what God wants to do in my life that day? Who knows what circumstances God might want to change? What orchestration He might want to work in my life? It doesn't matter how hopeless my situation might be. I serve God, the God who's in control of all these things. Imagine Mordecai, he wakes up under a death sentence. And yet by the time that the day's over, the situation has totally reversed itself. Mordecai's in Haman's place and Haman is hanging from the gallows. Get excited when you wake up in the morning. Who knows what God's going to want to do in your life that day? Verse 9 is the irony of all ironies. Now Harbona, one of the eunuchs, said to the king, "Well, look at that. The gallows. They weren't there yesterday, were they? And look at that, man, they're 50 cubits high. And I heard that Haman made them for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf. And he's standing in the house of Haman." Then the king said, "Hang him high. Hang him on it." And so they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's wrath subsided. Haman hangs from the gallows he built for Mordecai. How quickly God turned the tables on the enemy of the Jews. Makes you think of Saddam Hussein, doesn't it? And you know, this has been the case throughout the history of the Jews. How quickly God has turned the tables on those who hate the Jews. Guys, God told Abraham that he would bless the nations that bless Israel, but he would also curse the nations that curse his people Israel. And God has been faithful to that promise. You know, it's interesting. Even though Hitler killed 6 million Jews, in an amazing way, God turned the tables on Hitler's intentions. For it was the Holocaust that would soften world opinion, that would convince the United Nations of the need for a Jewish homeland. Hitler, the man that wanted to annihilate the Jews, was the primary cause in the formation of the modern state of Israel. After the Holocaust, the United Nations realized that Israel needed its own homeland, that the Jews would never be safe unless they had their own country and their own nation. What a strange twist. As Germany crumbled, Israel was reborn. God is into turning the tables on those who hate the Jews. Well, chapter 8 begins. On that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. Esther gets Haman's wealth. Mordecai gets his job. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her. So the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman. And the story applies to you and me. God is faithful to his people. When circumstances become grim, when all hope seems lost, when your fate seems hopeless, don't forget Esther. How quickly God can turn the tables. Now Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and implored him with tears to counteract the evil of Haman the Agite and the scheme which he had devised against the Jews. Now, even though Haman is dead, Esther knows that the clock is still clicking on the annihilation of the Jews. In 12 months, a bounty will be out on the heads of the Jews, and assassins all over Persia will try to cash in. And the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king and said, "If it pleases the king, and I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seems right to the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agite, when he wrote to annihilate the Jews who are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that will come to my people, or how can I endure to see the destruction of my countrymen?" Verse 7. Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew, "Indeed, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows because he tried to lay his hand on the Jews. You yourselves write a decree for the Jews as you please in the king's name and seal it with the king's signet ring, for a letter which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke." And remember, under Persian law, once a king signed an edict, it was irrevocable. Even the king himself couldn't reverse a prior decision that he had made. Once a decree was made by the king, it was final. But what Ahasuerus can do now is he can issue a new decree that will counterbalance his previous orders. Remember, because of Haman's insistence, he had ordered that all the Jews would be dead by the 12th month of the year. Now, though, he's going to issue a new order that's going to allow the Jews all over Persia to arm themselves and to defend themselves against their attackers. Verse 9. Here it describes how the Persian scribes record Ahasuerus' new orders. And one thing interesting about verse 9, good trivia question in the next time you play Bible trivia, here's something you throw out. What is the longest verse in the Bible? Esther chapter 8, verse 9, the verse we're about to read. Longest verse in the Bible, it's 81 words long. Ready? "So the king's scribes were called at that time in the third month, which is in the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day. And it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews, the satraps, the governors, and the princes of the provinces from India to Ethiopia. The whole Persian Empire was put on notice. 127 provinces in all, to every province in its own script, to every people in their own language, and to the Jews in their own script and language. And he wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus, sealed it with the king's signet ring, and sent letters by couriers on horseback, riding on royal horses bred from swift steeds. The Persian Pony Express delivered this new decree all across Persia. By these letters, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. On one day, in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is in the month of Adar. The Jews were even given first strike authority. In other words, they could launch a preemptive strike if it were necessary. And it's interesting, this has been the strategy of the modern state of Israel. You remember in 1981, as Saddam Hussein grew closer to producing a nuclear bomb, Israeli jets blew up his reactor in an overnight raid. They couldn't allow him to obtain nuclear weapons. They had to silence the threat before it could get launched. It was a preemptive strike. And this is the dilemma facing Israel today. Ahmadinejad and Iran are on the verge of having nuclear capabilities, and the Israelis cannot allow it to happen. A preemptive strike is on the horizon. When we were in Israel, when we were down at the Dead Sea, we saw F-16s flying right above us. They were doing their training exercises right down in the desert. We also saw some American military leaders on the ground. A chopper came in. When we were on top of Masada, a chopper came in, and a group of, they were two-star generals, some three-star generals. They had gotten out of the chopper, and they were up on top of Masada looking around. And our guide commented to me, he said, "Sandy, something is up." We started talking, and he told me he believes that it's only months before the Israelis bomb those Iranian reactors. He said, "We've got to strike. We've got to strike first. We cannot allow this madman in Iran, this Jew hater in Iran, to develop these nuclear devices." We were talking, he's convinced that Israel is going to strike before Bush leaves office. It's interesting that today the Persian or the Iranian leader is Israel's enemy. In Esther's day, Ahasuerus was Israel's friend. He tells the Jews to mobilize themselves and to get ready, to take preemptive precaution if necessary, but to defend themselves. A copy of the document was to be issued as a decree in every province and published for all people so that the Jews would be ready on that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. In other words, when this day arrives, the Jews are going to be loaded for bear. The couriers who rode on royal horses went out, hastened and pressed on by the king's command, and the decree was issued in Shushan, the citadel. So Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, the royal colors of Persia, with a great crown of gold and a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light and gladness, joy and honor. And in every province and city, wherever the king's command and decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a holiday. Then many of the people of the land became Jews, because fear of the Jews fell upon them.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams, here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy spoke to us from the book of Esther today. Esther's life did not go exactly as planned. She was the definition of a fish out of water for so many years until she aligned with God's purpose for her life. From that day forward, she led a purpose-driven and meaningful testimony for God. Her example of following God's will for her life led others to become living witnesses and had a tremendous impact on faith as we know it today. you may not be completely sure of God's will for your life. There will be times you feel led clearly, and then all of a sudden you realize the target is moved. Have you aligned with God's purpose for your life? If you'd like to hear more messages like this one, head over to sandyadams.org. Once again, that's sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. If you're in the Atlanta area, why not come visit us? We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. There's more information and directions at sandyadams.org. Well, that's about all we have time for today, but we look forward to our time together again very soon. There's so much more to share with you as Pastor Sandy teaches again from the Word of God on the next edition of Sandy Adams Radio.